Hello all, welcome to Up the Poshcast, the podcast made by the fans for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Welcome back to Up the Poshcast. Peterborough United lost 3-2. I will come to John first. Talk to me about the summary, sir.
Yeah, I mean, it felt a bit like an FA Cup tie in some strange ways. It felt like we were playing the best team in the league, and I think we were. I think they are, to be honest, one of the best teams League One has ever seen. Having said that, if we focus it on Posh, I thought we gave a credible account of ourselves. We started the game really well, and I think we showed the strength, shall I say, in the sense that we definitely rattled them as they were trying to play out. I thought Ricky J. Jones was absolutely outstanding in those first 25 minutes, really. Fully worth his goal. I like the fact that we played slightly more directly and we didn't invite pressure on ourselves at the back. I thought it got the best out of Valin and Fernandez for sure, and playing that long ball over the top also helped Ricky out. And we definitely caused him some problems throughout the game. I guess my only disappointment is the fact that when it went to 3-2, it never really felt like we threatened to get back into the game. And actually, after we went 2-0 up, really that's a game which should play into our hands. If you look at the strength that we have, which is on the counter-attack, they had to come after us. And we never really quite pressed on from that moment of being 2-0 up. However, I don't think you can be too dispirited with the performance. I don't think there was many bad displays on offer. And I actually hope we play a little bit more similar to that more often in terms of simplifying sort of our ball playing and progressive play. I thought it was better that we could turn their defence a little bit and just simplified it for the defenders. I thought it got a lot more out of the team. And if we keep playing like that, I'm pretty sure we'll be right up there at the upper echelons of the table come the end of the season.
Yeah, I think I reflect your thoughts, John. What I will say is I'll give a precursor to this by saying Birmingham are a fantastic football team. They've got fantastic players. But on Saturday, they were so lucky. And I walked down St Andrew Street after the game, like in the middle of all the Birmingham fans, because we got taken out a different exit. And they were all talking about how they felt they were really fortunate. They won the game, really. Their first goal was a fantastic goal, fair enough. It was their winger with a bit of quality and then a midfielder making a run into the box at the front post. And he pulled off a finish that not many League One players, I don't think, can do. That's fine. But the second goal was a shot that wasn't even anywhere near going on target until it was deflected in. And then the third goal was a volleyball pass that the referee somehow managed to miss at the back post. So we were really unlucky. I think we would have been really good value for a point. We would have been really good value for the win as well, I think. We were absolutely sensational in the first half an hour. I think as much as Birmingham are a very good side, and you saw glimpses of that, and you saw glimpses of Hansen, especially on the left-hand side, causing Katongo big problems, and you saw glimpses of Stansfield at moments, and you could see how good of a team they were. They didn't really show up massively on Saturday, and they were very, very fortunate to get something out of that game.
Yeah, and obviously it was great to experience St Andrews in full swing. It was a great experience on match day, and it was really, really good. In terms of playing football, I do actually disagree, Charlie, in the terms that they didn't necessarily show up. I thought as a team, as a unit, once they figured out our trigger press and once they figured out how much, you know, we sort of like to run at the back line and put pressure on, I thought as a unit, they played much better. So when you're talking about individuals not necessarily standing out, I think as a unit, as a team, they all played their part to win the game. And I think they thoroughly deserved to win the game. Having said that, we were phenomenal for the first half an hour. We were. That's the best I think I've seen us play this season. I really enjoyed it, especially, you know, just Katongo, Manny Fernandez as well. I think we'll talk about later on in the podcast, but I thought it was unreal throughout the whole game, but a bit even more absolutely outstanding in that first 40, 45. I just feel like we didn't do enough later on, exactly as you've said, Charlie, we didn't do enough later on to get up the pitch, to continue to put the pressure on, to continue playing our football. We dropped back, we sat deep, we got deeper and deeper and deeper. And that's where these Birmingham City players are going to thrive. And I feel like they did, especially as a unit, they're amazing. So yeah, give them their flowers. They were great.
Another thing that I noticed about them that was so good was just how they managed to use width. So we're pressing and that naturally leads us all to one side of the pitch or the other. They managed to find space for either their fullback or their winger to then spray it across the other side. Time and time again, this led to our left back or right back being isolated. It's exactly how they ultimately ended up getting the first goal, because Katongo had an overload on his side. They got round him and put it in for Willemsen. And, you know, especially in the second half as well, there was just so many moments where you knew that that was the plan for them. And it was very difficult for us to deal with that without changing our game and sitting off more. But even when we sat off a little bit more, which I think we did in the last period of the game, once the subs came on, that didn't work either. And that takes very, very good coaching. They knew exactly what they wanted to do. They didn't give up on it, even though they were 2-0 down. And yeah, credit to them. That's how we were beaten today. I'd love to see us, you know, our idea is to break out the back, get to the wingers, and the wingers run at them, and then see what we can do from there, normally, with occasional balls over the top to Ricky. If we could introduce that spraying across the pitch into our game, I think that would be very, very effective. But you need top-quality players to do that.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that that's probably the important thing to note of Birmingham, is that is a championship-ready team. They are essentially using this as a warm-up for next season. But at the same time, I think that it's really important to note that we did absolutely have them rattled for the first 20 minutes of that game. They did not know how to cope with Ricky. I don't know what their goalkeeper is doing. Like I said, that Sanderson was a donkey, but Jesus Christ, what is their goalkeeper doing on his line? Like, to be slide tackled by Ricky, that is just appalling from them. And I note that a lot of fans of theirs were really disappointed with their goalkeeper. And then we did what we mentioned after Leyton Orient. We put the ball in the box. And what happens? We score from a corner. Manny Fernandez rises highest and puts the ball in the back of the net. So sort of for that first 20 minutes or so, like, that is what everything like I wanted. It was a phenomenal feeling. And then ultimately the quality shone through. Whether you call it luck, whether you call it like a little bit of good fortune, all that sort of stuff, ultimately, not to say that they bought their luck, but when you spend the money that they have, you give yourselves an opportunity a little bit more than obviously sort of where we're at the moment. And I think that ultimately we've given a fantastic account of ourselves. Like Charlie mentions, I'm not going to say that we were probably unlucky to lose, because Birmingham were considerably better for ultimately 70 minutes of the game. But we have done everything to show, like John says, that we will compete this season, given that we've competed against the team that will win the league. That is the important thing from this, is that that is the team that will win the league. And we've gone there and spooked them for 20 minutes. Yes, we've thrown it away, but that's where we're a work in progress and they're already made outfit for me.
Yeah, it was a bit of a strange one, wasn't it? The first 20 minutes was great. The rest of the first half was probably quite even. And then the second half was just, I felt all Birmingham. The first half I thought was really, really enjoyable. It was two teams just playing their own style, going at each other. It felt like neither team had set up to counteract the strengths of the other team. We were playing on the counter. I think, was it John that said we were playing a bit more direct? It was 100% that was the case. And then, like Harry said, they were really strong on the wings. Those 1-2s were killing our fullbacks. Really enjoyable end-to-end game for that first half. And then I think as soon as they took the lead, they sort of just let us have the ball a bit. And we didn't really have the attack and threat. It's sort of like a common theme now this season, not getting the ball in the box and, more importantly, in the goal. I do want to focus on the positives, though, because like you've all said, Birmingham got the strongest squad and they're clearly going to win the league. And we did come close to getting a result from them. The only positive thing that hasn't been mentioned yet is the corners. Obviously, Manny Fernandez scored, and we've mentioned that. But just getting the ball in the box, every corner we had went in the box. It was an in-swinger, went in the box. And that's just what we've been begging for all season. This short option just needs to go.
Yeah, and just on the performance as well, I don't think it was a performance to be disappointed by. And I think I'm happy that seems to be echoed by a lot of us here. Despite throwing away 2-0, I think their quality shone through. And look, that outfit, their side, their fans, their state, it doesn't deserve to be in League One. They have built a very good, you know, when they go up to the Championship, I presume they're going to have a perfectly fine time in the Championship next time around. Their team is unreal. And their quality shone through. And I don't think from where we at, considering we lost our whole back line, a lot of our key players, a lot of our spine, and this squad is still relatively fresh and new, and a lot of it is young, I am perfectly happy with the way that we performed against that outlet. And everything that we've been asking to be improved on has been improved on. And corners, especially, as Lods has just mentioned, you know, to score from one and to get the balls that beat the first man, and to put people who are going to do smart crosses, and we looked like we had some sort of routine going. That's really positive. So I completely agree with John. I think we're going to be up there. I don't think we're going to be massively up there. I think the playoffs are an aspiration. We'll see where it lands. But this squad can only get better. And I feel that if we can continue on the route that we're going at the moment, especially after that result and only being beaten by a goal, you know, margins, very fine margins. I think that actually this squad's going to do very well. And come Christmas time, as I think a lot of us have been saying over the past few weeks, come Christmas, when the squad has gelled, when we've got, you know, people back from injury and things like that, I think we're gonna be all right.
I just want to single out three players from yesterday who I think deserve a hell of a lot of credit, and actually have they've all taken a degree of stick over their posh careers. I think the first being Manny Fernandez, who's someone that I've been relatively critical on here. I think on the ball, there are still concerns, but yesterday he was absolutely phenomenal, and he absolutely, we collectively gave him the Man of the Match award. He thoroughly deserved that. I thought because we simplified the instructions of playing out, it really suited him, and it actually amplified his strengths. He was aggressive. He won multiple headers, and actually having him in the team from set of pieces, if you're going to whip them in the box, he's scored one, he's flattened the keeper on another. He's such a threat from them that if you are going to score goals from those sort of situations, we become a massively better team for it. So there is an argument to play him, certainly if you're going to simplify the system and go slightly more direct. Oscar Vallin, I thought, was also brilliant throughout, considering the boy's been in England for, what, 2-3 months now. To play that well in that stadium, probably the biggest game of his career. I thought he was absolutely superb. He was aggressive. He was front-footed. He was good on the ball. He never looked rattled. He rarely wasted a pass. Really, really encouraged from what I'm seeing from Vallin already, actually. I think he's a great find, and the club deserve a lot of credit for plucking him out of Sweden. And I hope the strikers is the similar quality to him, because if it is, then we're in luck and it should be good. And lastly is Ricky J. Jones. I think he's a player that I have relentlessly defended. Ash has relentlessly defended, but he is a player who has received a lot of stick from this fan base in certain sections of it. I think now you're starting to see why the club have had so much faith in him. I think what he did in the first 25 minutes to Birmingham, they could not handle him. Their centre-backs did not know what to do with him. And he is such a threat when he gets going. And yes, he's not the prettiest footballer. Don't think he's ever going to be. Don't think he's ever going to be the best finisher in the world. But what he does have is he's just relentless. He's so quick. You can bang balls down to the channel for him all day and he'll cause problems. He'll turn nothing balls into things that can really, really help the team. And he is becoming a really key player for this side now. When he goes off, we are not half the team as when Ricky J. Jones is in it. And he deserves a hell of a lot of love from this fan base. And I was pleased to hear some chants of he's one of our own, because I think this fan base really needs to embrace Ricky J. Jones, because we're starting to see him develop into a proper number nine.
One more thing on Jones that I loved. I watched the halfway line interview, which the Posh Plus app had. and he just comes across great. I think he's a pretty chilled guy, but his attitude towards football and his love of how the club's brought him through from 9 years old. He also mentioned that his picture is up in the academy wall, along with a couple of other players, as like an inspiration of what you can do as an academy player. And you can't buy that, right? Like, I'm sure there will be a player who plays for Peterborough United in, who knows, 2030, who will have looked at Ricky playing right now and thought, I want to be like that for Posh. And I love that he's getting better as well, because you're absolutely right. There were times, you know, a couple of years ago where he looked very raw. And he still looks raw in some places. I would love to see his finishing and maybe some of his hold-up and build-up play improve as much as his decision-making of his pressing and the runs that he makes. And when he knocks the ball out of his feet, he can dribble very well like that now. I don't think that was always true of him. And I just hope he keeps improving and we're looking at an incredible player. That being said, if he stays, he's got no idea with the, you know, he's got 1 year left, I think, hasn't he?
Yeah, look, like Ricky is somebody that I've backed religiously, same as John, for probably the last 18 months or so. And it is so, so good to see him coming true. The only frustration, and I think it is a frustration across the fan base, is that he seems to get these knocks and niggles that ultimately affect his game. He took a knock. It looked like it was his hip, potentially, maybe like a glute or something like that, after sort of 30 minutes, I think it was. And then he was never the same after that. And it rings true to sort of the game that we had against Bristol Rovers. He came off, we conceded goals. He took a knock yesterday and then we started conceding goals and carrying it on. And then ultimately, he played nearly all of the game, I think it was, if not all the game. But the problem is that we didn't utilise that long throw of his yesterday. There was an opportunity to use it and we took a short throw. We got the centre-backs up. I think that is a massive, massive frustration of mine that we didn't utilise that when it was right down in the corner, right by the Posh fans. Manny Fernandez came up, Varling came up, and we didn't utilise it, because it's all well and good playing the short throw-ins, but when you've got the guy that can literally launch it into the back of the box rather than the front of the box, I think it's absolutely something that we should be utilising more. I know that it's boring potentially and it's a little bit backwards for football, but if that's what we've got, we should 100% be using it whilst we've got it, because it petrifies teams, just like it petrifies me when teams have long throws against us.
I'm going to be really, really worried when or if Ricky leaves, whether that's in January at the end of the season. I feel his pace and his explosivity and his directness is almost irreplaceable in this league. He is unreal. It terrifies back lines, terrifies defenders. Whether you're bringing him on in the 70th minute when the back line's tired, whether you're starting him when the back line's fresh, we've learned over the past year and a half that it doesn't actually matter where you play him. You know, if you're going to play him on the wing, he'll beat a man. If you're going to play him through the back line, he's going to terrify a defensive back line. So this Swedish striker that we're bringing in, I'm going to be really keen to watch him play. Whether, you know, we can replicate that sort of speed that Ricky has, but it's going to be a real shame if he goes at some point, or if he doesn't renew his contract and the new striker that we're bringing in or Malik doesn't contain that same explosivity that Ricky has, because it really does give us another option.
Yeah, I guess I'll sort of touch on one player that I thought he was good on Saturday, but more just one of the actual big positives of the season so far for me, Donny O'Brien Brady. I think he has been sensational. He was Academy Player of the Year last season. He was, and, you know, Harry, I know, always likes to give the anecdote about how he loved his first interview at the club and that he seems like a really humble lad. And you can definitely tell that when he plays. He gives his absolute all on the pitch. He makes really good decisions. You know, every time he misplaces a pass, instantly he fronts up to it. He doesn't shout at people. He puts his hands up. It's fantastic. I'm a massive fan of him. And just his versatility as well. You know, he played in the six against Shrewsbury. He's been sort of put in loads of different midfield positions. And then, due to the absence of some, you know, pathetic crybaby on Saturday, he ended up playing in the 10. And he just took to it like a duck to water. did everything he needed to do, tactically got it right. And yeah, he was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I'm a huge fan of Donny O'Brien Brady. And he is, yeah, one of the big positives. And I think our midfield is in safe hands with him.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you, Charlie. I think that we've got somebody that's come through our academy and he is going to be a massive, massive asset to us again. Another one that we've grown, we've taken him, and then we are going to make millions from him because he is, like you say, Charlie, a fantastic, fantastic footballer. He is happy to be dropped in at the drop of a hat in what was ultimately a massive, massive game and was like a duck to water.
So on that note, I guess by definition, it meant someone else wasn't available. I mean, Chris Clark is injured, but Fergie came out and said that Joel Randall, for now, is unhappy. His training levels have dropped. And for the time being, he won't be considered for match time. I guess it's an open question, guys. I personally, and I'm probably not going to comment much on this because I don't like the fact that we haven't heard necessarily the whole story. I don't want to jump to conclusions. Perhaps others in here will have different views. But I've always been a fan of Randall. I want to see him succeed. I'm just disappointed that he's not going to be considered for the time being because I've always liked him as a player. I don't think there's many at League One level who can do what he does. And people focus a lot on what he doesn't do, but pretty much no attacking mid in this league does do absolutely everything, all action. But look, I'm not going to be able to say how well he's played for the time being because he won't be there. I open the floor to you.
Yeah, I just want to start off by saying I love Darren Ferguson. I've always defended him. I've never been Fergie out in all four of his stints, apart from maybe at the very end of his second stint. I was in a very small minority of people that was happy to see him back when he took over from McCann this fourth time. And occasionally Fergie does some really, really stupid things. And I think his comments on Randall is one of them. Probably the most stupid he's done in all four stints. If you are going to be digging someone out publicly, any employee in any walk of life, you need to be reasonably certain that it's going to have a positive effect. And I'd like to know what effect he thought digging Randall out like that would have. Because if he thought that Randall was going to come to training the next day and put a 10 out of 10 performance in training, it doesn't matter because Randall's career is finished now. He is someone that's struggled with mental health previously. That's a fact. He is someone that is part of a leadership group at the club, which Fergie created 2 months ago. He lives with another member of the leadership group. And there's a member of the leadership group, the captain, who is also waiting to sign a new contract, who's probably just watched all of that happen and think, fuck, that could be me next week. There are so many negatives to calling out Randall. Regardless of what he did, take what he did out of equation, and I'm talking Randall as the person here, not the footballer. I don't agree that anyone that's just not training hard and not working hard, and I'm sure he's had his warnings, he should be disciplined and he should get some sort of comeuppance from the club. But to publicly dig them out like that, given Randall's history with the club, given the situation regarding Collins and Kyprianou, I just think that was utterly stupid from Fergie.
Can I ask, at what point do we stop fucking defending Joel Randall? He stunk the place out for 2 years in his first 2 years after £1 million transfer. He's one of the most expensive players in club history. Ferguson, the only way to get him into form was to tell him that he wouldn't be dropped despite how badly he played, and actually taking the pressure off him helped. Every time he's had an element of pressure on him in a posh shirt, he has flopped massively. The fans have chanted his name. He's got relentless support despite being the worst of our five midfielders last season. Collins, Mason Clark, Poku and Kyprianou all outperformed Joel Randall, who was nothing short of an average player that was flattered by the system. And then he's been at fault for multiple goals that we've conceded this season. He's barely put in a good performance apart from the last 20 minutes at Shrewsbury away, and he throws his dummy out of the pram because he's been dropped for Con Clark for a couple of games after signing a long-term contract, getting a contract on a wage that he barely deserves. And admittedly, that's not his fault. But at what point do we start putting some pressure on someone that's cost this club £1 million and is now the highest paid player at the club? At what point can we put some pressure on him? Because he's had a nicey-nicey ride and been bang average. We've wasted a load of money on him. It's about time he fucking started playing for this football club, because that's what we deserve at this point.
I agree with you. Randall, the whole time he's been at Posh, I don't think he's put in the performances that we were expecting of him. And he's definitely not deserving to be the highest paid player at the club if that's what we've done. But Darren McAntony has given him the contract. So has Dara just gone against what Fergie's wishes? Because this isn't just sprung up this week, has it? This is something that Fergie's obviously put to Dara, that Joel Randall isn't the player I need him to be. And Dara's gone ahead and given him the contract anyway. So if Fergie wants to dig Randall out like this, and he's saying that he didn't want to give him a new contract, then the relationship between Fergie and Dara is now breaking down. And I don't think Fergie's going to be here past January, if that's the case.
I don't think that Fergie's saying that he didn't want him on a new contract. Joel Randall signed that new contract and then decided that he doesn't want to be at the club because he's been dropped for a couple of games, from what I can tell and what I can deduce. And frankly, I'm prepared to put back Darren Ferguson over Joel Randall. I will trust Darren Ferguson's judgment over Joel Randall's, who's, as I say, has done very little in 3.5 years at Peterborough United.
So what do you think, how do you think the conversation went between Fergie and Dara then? If you're saying that Fergie didn't want Randall to sign that deal.
Well, what I think's happened is Fergie would have wanted to keep a Joel Randall that wanted to play for the club. He was a key player for Fergie's backed Randall throughout his whole time in a Posh shirt. He played him for how many games last season, despite I don't think he was brilliant. He's backed him. He's promoted him he started him in the first few games this season over Con Clark, over Poku in the 10, who is a viable option there, as we've seen. What's happened is Randall's seen that he's not getting in the team for a few games, despite not being brilliant. And all of a sudden he thinks, oh, I want to go off to Bolton or wherever you've rejected, where I'm going to play every week. Well, you wouldn't play there, Joel, because you're not good enough anyway. And they'd have found that out quite quickly anyway.
Dara's openly admitted that Randall was unhappy before he signed the deal. He said he was really hesitant signing it in the first place. And he said that we should be grateful that he's had this U-turn. I don't think this is new stuff that Randall's unhappy. If Bolton were going to be paying him lots more money than what he's on now, then he's going to be unhappy. It happens to players all the time.
I will back down after this point, but at what point do we treat Joel Randall as an adult? If he's not unhappy, why sign a new contract to Peterborough United? If you're going to be unhappy within the first 2 months.
Why do we offer him the new contract? If he's unhappy, just sell him. If Bolton were offering £2 million, like Dara said, why have we rejected that and given him a new deal if he's unhappy? Doesn't make any sense.
Okay, I'm just going to loop all the way back to your point, John. On discussing what Joel Randall has done in a Posh shirt. I avidly disagree with a lot of what you're saying in terms of his playing ability. I think Joel Randall offers our system, whether you want to call him a system player or whether you want to call him a player of great strength. I think he offers our team last season a lot more than you are giving him credit for. His close control and his ability to play passes and get counter-attacks going in that position in the midfield three became irreplaceable. We didn't have a player that could do what Joel Randall could do in terms of a lot of the way we played, and ultimately after he found that form and after Ferguson had worked so hard to get him into a position where he could play that sort of football, that skill set started to flourish. And actually, I don't necessarily think it was Fergie being reluctant to drop him. I think in the end he earned his spot in that starting 11. And that goes to show by he was in a team that, you know, we won a trophy with. He was in a team that helped us finish third in the league. It's ridiculous. I can't get my head around it. And he has struggled so much with injury over the first 2 years that actually the fans gave him a boost, because like Harry and like myself, I think actually wanted to see him succeed. And I do think that he has succeeded in the Peterborough United shirt. And I think it ultimately, after last season, he deserved to get a new contract and he deserved that payroll. Now, this is in no way defending his actions, because I will loop back to this before I give up to all the angry faces on the podcast. Look, this is not me defending his actions. If what Dan Ferguson has said is true and his judgment, and again, I trust Dan Ferguson's judgment, and he's just flat out refusing to play for the club, then I think that's really childish and really pathetic. And it's a horrible way to end a career that realistically you just got off the ground after such a great season last season.
Do you know what? You all know my thoughts on mental health, and I'm not going to try and like sympathise on this one too much. But if he was struggling with his mental health, congratulations to him. He has completely thrown himself under the bus now, because he is not getting a shred of sympathy from anybody if he ever steps foot on a football pitch for Peterborough United again. Not from me, not from John by the looks of things. And ultimately, I can hear the boos already if he ever comes back onto the pitch. We say that we don't have a ready-made replacement for him, or we didn't last season. We do now. Donny O'Brien Brady is perfect. He is exactly what we need. He's so forward-thinking. I would have absolutely no issue if Joel Randall never played for this football club again. He thinks that he's bigger than this club. Cool. Fantastic. Fine. Off you go. Sit with the 21s. Play with Romelu Crichlow. Play with David Ajiboy and lose games with them. Like, if you think that you're better than this club, go and find yourself a team that thinks that you're going to be fantastic. Cancel your contract so that you're not sat here taking money off of our club, and go and find yourself a team that can have you on a free. Yes, that's never going to happen because we're not going to lose an asset, but the £2 million player is now probably worth 200 grand because everybody knows that he doesn't want to be here. So thank you very much for that, Mr. Randall. I'm not going to go in too much, but I think that you've made an absolutely awful decision. Like Charlie said when we recorded last week, yesterday was ready-made for Joel Randall, and he has stuffed himself over two games, essentially, where we needed to try something different because it wasn't working. I don't agree that he was actually that fantastic last season. We watched him score a long-range goal at Spalding in pre-season, which where we said, well, why didn't he do that at all last year? He scored lots of tap-ins. He got lots of assists. Like, yes, the system was fantastic for him, but it's an 11-man game. It's not a Joel Randall show.
I think the truth of Joel Randall is, I think people in this fan base are too prone to skirting around the point with Joel Randall. And I think it is because of what Ashley said with the whole mental side of this game. He's been portrayed as very fragile, which is, you know, fair enough. He's had a difficult time. But let's be completely honest here. If Joel Randall was a £150,000 signing from the National League, he would have left this club in summer 2022. The only reason we gave him a go last season was because he cost so much money to this football club. He played 56 games last season. He was probably good in, 20 of them, and very mediocre in the rest, and poor in some of the, as Ash mouths, if that, he was good in 20 of them. This season, he hasn't shown up. Dell has accused him of not getting stuck into tackles, not, you know, trying his best. And yes, I completely agree. I've been willing to accept it because I felt maybe it's just a system thing. But now with what's going on now, it almost feels like it has just been Joel Randall realising he's got that big money contract. He's tied down. He's, you know, Fergie said he's one of the highest paid players, if not the highest paid player at the club. He needs to step up. We cannot treat him like a baby anymore. He is a footballer who has been at the club for a while, who has had the unconditional support of a lot of the fan base over the last sort of 18 months, who has been entrusted by both the management staff, by the chairman, to deliver on the pitch for the club, to be part of a leadership group, to lead a young group forward this season. And after 8 games, he has thrown the toys out of his pram like a baby. I mean, what an example to set for the younger players. You know, we've spoken about Donny O'Brien Brady. Well done, Joel Randall. You set him a great example of what to do when things don't go your way at a football club. It's pathetic. It is ridiculous. It is everything that is wrong with the modern day footballer. And I will stick by that. Because I think Joel Randall, well, I've defended him. I've defended him as recently as weeks ago this season. he needs to get his act together now, or he can go in January on a free for all I care.
I'm not saying for one moment that his behaviour is correct, because I am in complete agreement with everybody else on the podcast that if what Darren Ferguson has said is 100% true, then he can leave. He can go. If he doesn't want to play for the club, I don't want to see him play again. I'm in a complete agreement. What I don't like is the fact that we are completely disregarding what he did for us last season. And I cannot look, I'm not saying that he was our best player, but without him in that system that we had last season, we are nowhere near as good. We aren't. It's as simple as that. He basically pulled the strings for the attack, especially in launching counterattacks and especially in getting us up the pitch. And regardless of whether you think he's an idiot, he's a twat, you know, for being the way he is and acting the way that he is now, that's fine. That's a completely different opinion. But I cannot believe that people are completely disregarding and shoving under the carpet how good he was for us last season. It's a joke. Without him in that front four does not thrive as well as they did then.
Do you know what? I think the big thing in this is that we keep saying that Joel Randle was a fantastic player, but we never tried anybody else because it was so much, oh, let's play him, let's fairy around him. Like, we didn't try anything else. We didn't do anything else last season because it worked for us. Did it work because Joel Randle was there? We don't know. It could have been anybody else. Pocker's a fantastic 10. Mason Clark could have probably dropped in the 10. We know that Burrows could have played in the 10. And probably all of these people would have done just as good of a job, if not better, because I know that Burrows can hit the ball from outside the box. Pocker can hit the ball out from outside the box. Mason Clark can hit the ball from outside the box. We could have changed formation. Fergie is not just the... I know that he gets accused of not changing things quick enough, but he's done it three times now this season already, and we've played three different systems. The only reason that we did that was to either give Joel Randle this mollycoddling that he needed so that we could try and make some money of him, or that we just felt like it was do or die and ultimately throwing that pie straight back in our face. Like, I can't remember whether it was John or Charlie mentioned, we now ultimately have a leadership group of four players. One doesn't want to be here in Randle. Kyprianou doesn't want to be here and wants to go on to bigger and better things. Archie Collins is in, or Joel Randle's in Archie Collins' ear. And then Jed Steers here just to sort of move his career on a little bit further and get some proper game time under his belt. We are, like, it's at this point that I tweeted yesterday, Manny Fernandez to be our captain. At the end of the season. I think that all three of them and then potentially Pocku go in January, and it's almost like a complete and utter factory reset in January, because the place is going to start stinking if we don't start winning.
Yeah, my biggest fear is I don't care what Joel Randle does anymore. I really hope he leaves the club. I kind of want him gone in the summer. I definitely want him gone now. But my biggest fear is obviously Archie Collins is his best mate. I believe they live together. I do not want this festering. I do not want this to become a squad issue. I do not want Archie Collins' form to suffer because of it, because Archie Collins is an excellent player at League One level. He is a key player, and he is a player that can play higher than Peterborough United. So we need Collins at his very best, and I really hope that it doesn't filter down the squad. And obviously Jack Sparks is another player who knows Joel Randle well. There is a fear that this becomes almost a dressing room mutiny led by an irrelevant player. So I really, really don't want that. And I hope that whatever the situation is dealt with professionally. We can draw a line under it, get rid of Randle in January, and Collins and Sparks stick with the manager and stick with the club, because that's my biggest fear now, that this spreads throughout the squad. And I really hope that it doesn't.
I think we're all saying a lot of big words for three sentences from Fergie. I mean, I still think there's a chance that there will be a route back for Randle. The idea that he'll get booed the moment he comes on a pitch. Well, if he plays well, I think we'll cheer him. I think, yes, I completely agree. We went out of our way at the beginning of last season to sing his name, even though at that point he hadn't done much for the club. I know. And I was there. We were all there for these away games where we pushed it. And he was loving the way we were chanting his name. He was at a beaming smile on his face at Barnsley away, where we won, beaming smile on his face after the 5-0 at Cambridge, where, by the way, he was probably our best player on the pitch. I don't know if we're all forgetting that. This idea that the system would have been the same without him, as if we cannot just kind of make up that logic for anyone else. And fundamentally, I still don't think we've heard the full story. DMAC seemed to believe that this was a bit of a storm in a teacup and we could well see him back again in the future. I bet we've had things like this in the past within the club. In fact, I can think of one where Fergie once said, Gabby Zakuani will never play for this club again because he had a drink on after a loss, even though he was in church the next morning. And Fergie eventually had him back in the team. I mean, I think we're all reacting so quickly. I know that I'll never change some of your minds on how well Randall plays. I disagree with you. I think he's really good for us. I think he's really good at League One level and could even be good at Championship level with the right players around him. But even if he weren't good, I still think that we're going way too hard here, personally.
Harry, you mentioned the Zakuani thing, and that was obviously a thought that came in my head when these comments about Randall was made. And from what I remember of that time, the fans fully backed Zakuani and turned on Fergie. And I reckon Fergie left not long after that. And of course, there was another occasion more recently with Christy Pym where the fans backed Fergie and Christy Pym left shortly after. You think that Randall might have a way of getting back into this squad? I cannot see it. Cannot see it in a million years. I think Dara has to come on Twitter and say what he said, because Randall is an asset that he supposedly has just turned £2 million down for, and he's made him his highest paid player. He's going to struggle to sell him in January now. So Dara has to say what he says, but he will get booed when he comes back on the pitch, and that will happen regardless of what manager is in charge and regardless of what performance he puts out on the pitch. It's going to take him multiple 10 out of 10 performances to get back to being on the fan side, and he isn't capable of multiple 10 out of 10 performances. It's just as simple as that.
Coming up next on Tuesday night, Peterborough United are away at Wigan Athletic. Wigan have been struggling for goals recently with a couple of nil-nils. They sit in an interesting spot in the table where if they'd nicked a goal in a couple of those games, they'd be something like playoffs. And if they'd lost those games with a goal going in, they'd be in the relegation zone. So it's a weird one for them. I went on a Wigan podcast today, and it sounds like they're very stout defensively, but are struggling for goals, and that's basically what's permeating their side. Charlie, I'll come to you. What's your view on the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think you sort of understatement about how bad they've been at scoring goals this season. If they draw 0-0 on Tuesday night with us, that'll be their fourth 0-0 draw in a row. So exciting times to be a Wigan fan. A couple of players to highlight for them, really. First of all, one of the ultimate posh scapegoats of recent years, Michael Olakigbe, now plays for Wigan. So he'll get a lovely reception on Tuesday night, I'm sure. You know, remember Exeter. And then also, you know, their best player. I don't know how many of you will remember him, but he's absolutely rent-free in my head. When Wigan beat us 3-2 at London Road earlier this year, and they had that lad with the ponytail, Asgard, and he tore us to absolute shreds. Yet he's still there, still ripping it up for them. So, yeah, they're a tough team. They're the best team in the league defensively. They're the best team in the league in terms of they've got the most clean sheets. They've conceded the least goals, but they are relegation zone for goals scored. They've scored the 20th most goals in the league. They're really struggling. And with our defence, if it's anywhere near as good as it was on Saturday, we shouldn't have a problem keeping them at bay, despite what I've said about Asgard and Olakigbe. So what we really need is for our attacking players, you know, your Rickies, your Maliks, your Pokus, to be on their best form, because that is where we might struggle, is to break down what's going to be very robust defence we're met with.
Funnily enough, one of the things that came up on that pod was that Asgard's actually been getting some tension from the crowd for not quite pulling off the right moves. I on the pod said, funnily enough, that sounds like one of our players. I mean, let's see how it goes, but perhaps their crowd might turn on them if they're failing to be creative.
I'm not sure that the crowd will turn, because I don't think there's going to be anybody there, is there? If Charlie's saying that they've had 3 nil-nils on the back of it, like they are ultimately a rugby town, aren't they? And they're probably used to high scoring rugby games. I know that we went last year on a Tuesday. it's probably going to be a similar sort of attendance next on Tuesday night, isn't it? Where there's probably 300-400 Posh fans, and then let's say 5,000 or 6,000 Wigan fans. It's a big stadium. I'm hoping that we will like to use the pitch there. Obviously, we didn't have a fantastic result there last season, but I'm pretty confident that we'll be able to run them ragged. Let's say, provided that Ricky can get over his glute injury that he's got after Saturday.
On Wigan. I think out of just me and Ashley going here for Wigan, I'm really looking forward to it. It's another Tuesday night trip. But on top of that, Wigan, as Charlie said, you know, they're going to be not only difficult to break down, but I think they'll probably be they're not going to be the best going forward. However, they have got some good players that I am a little bit scared of, and I don't know after everything that's come out recently how the dressing room's going to be following our previous discussion. So I actually am more worried than I think a lot of people are here for Tuesday night, just on a 1-0 scrappy loss or even a 1-0 scrappy win. It's going to be an interesting game from both halves, so I am looking forward to it, but I'm just hoping that the dressing room and everything around is sort of okay and at peace before we jump into the Tuesday game, sort of brush it behind us, even if it is, you know, just give us a few days to reset afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only risk is that we're going to be knackered on Tuesday night. We've had a really busy week, you know. Bristol Rovers ended up being a bit of a slog at the end, and then we had Leighton Orient, and the players looked out on their feet after that, and then we had to go again at Birmingham on Saturday, and we really gave our all at Birmingham. And it just feels like this could be one of those days where you just see the effect, see the wear and tear, see the tiredness. I don't know if Fergie will make changes. He might have to. I don't know how the squad's looking. But yeah, I think, I mean, he's going to have to get some fresh legs involved. You know, is this a night for example, Kean Hayes to finally get involved in football? He's been in and out of matchday squads. He's not been picked. Is this a night where who has pretty much fresh legs? I don't think he's played in like weeks, where he could be involved and pose a different threat. You know, do we risk Ricky for injury when we've got so many good home games that are much more winnable than Wigan away coming up? Do we risk Ricky, or do we actually just give him the night off? You know, is Bradley going to be fit? Can he play maybe? There's a lot of if, buts and maybes about the team selection. And I am just worried that we are going to see some proper fatigue on Tuesday night in these players' legs.
I'm not too sure that we need to change too much, if I'm being completely honest. Obviously, yesterday was obviously a disappointing end to the day, but there are a lot of individual performances that they can all be proud of, and I think that those that had strong individual performances should carry that into Tuesday. I'm not too concerned about them being tired. At the end of the day, they are all young lads, and they should be able to bounce back relatively quickly. Of course, it would be nice to see a couple of rotations just to keep things fresh, but I think sort of you're talking 7-8 of the players should be the same that started at the week. And I think that maybe probably the one change might be that we might see potentially Poku move into the middle, and Donny O'Brien-Brady drop out, and then potentially, like you say, Otto or Kean Hayes come in. And then in terms of Wigan, am I right in saying that they lost the centre-back, Charlie Hughes, is it, the guy at the back? Yeah, so like in terms of defensive, like he was probably what our Ronnie Edwards was, and if not slightly better potentially. It's naive maybe to feel confident. I don't think it's going to be an absolute spanking, but I would hope that we could go there and nick a win this season.
Yeah, I'm quite happy with the lineup we put out against Birmingham. I would like to see that start again. But the one player that it's a bit of a confusing one is Sam Curtis, who seems to have been dropped for David Ajiboy for the new system. And since we've been going back to a four, hasn't really got a look in either. I think Dornelli got on the pitch before him against Birmingham, and obviously Katongo started the game. If Wigan aren't as attacking as perhaps Birmingham are, maybe it's a good confidence boost for Sam Curtis to come in. Nothing that Katongo has done wrong, but the last two sub appearances from Sam Curtis haven't been the best, and he's probably lacking in confidence now. At Orient, he put his hand up an apology at the end of the game, so he knows that he's not playing well as well. So, yeah, I just think maybe we should use Wigan as a confidence boost for Sam Curtis.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I'm personally starting James Dornelli on Tuesday night. I think he's one of our academy graduates. His attitude's been fantastic. He's been in and around the playing squad. He was very good against Shrewsbury. And Sam Curtis, since he's come back from international duty, has been absolutely stinking up the gaff. Why would you throw him in if he doesn't look confident? He's not been good, has he? I mean, let's not be funny here. He's been very poor. And making loads of mistakes. Why not give Dornelli a go? If we, you know, he's very similar to O'Brien Brady, I think, in his attitude, in his sort of endeavour. I'd be giving James Dornelli a go 100%. I think he can totally handle it. And the other thing is, you know, defensively, we are maybe looking a little bit light now. You know, Katongo went off on Saturday and it looked like he was gesturing that he'd, you know, torn his hamstring or something along those lines. It didn't look good anyway. So we are a little bit light back there, and it opens the door potentially for George Nevitt. I think maybe Tuesday night's a bit early for him, but why not get him involved soon? Because he's another player that we were told that would be really good. And if Wigan are a team that we're going to struggle to break down but haven't got a massive attacking threat, why not play, you know, one of the better ball players in the squad at centre back? Because, you know, if we're looking to tear them apart, we need those big diags, those bursting runs forward, and George Nevitt may be the player to do it. I don't know how he's looked for the under-21s. I'm not going to pretend I've watched him for them, but at some point he's got to get involved, right? And Tuesday night could be the perfect time, and I don't think Wigan would expect it either.
Yeah, and I think on the sort of Curtis versus Dornelli thing, I think that my probably biggest frustration is that it probably should be Curtis, just purely in a financial sense, in that we bring this guy in on loan. Every day that he doesn't play is wasted money, isn't it? He's not our player. He's not getting any better. We've allegedly got a fantastic relationship with Sheffield United. We want to sort of keep them happy. So I think for me, it would be Curtis. We talked about Randall, obviously, playing himself in and out of form all of last season. So let's give Curtis that chance against, like we say, potentially not the biggest of attacking threats.
All right. Well, I think we've got to get those score predictions in. Also, for the listeners, unlikely that we will record an episode before Stevenage, so there won't be a preview of that game. And because there's no way of knowing how things will unfold with Wigan, probably won't do score predictions for that now. We'll do them later in the week on Twitter. Ash, give me your score.
I'm going to go 2-0 Posh. Ricky J. Jones and Manny Fernandez from a corner again.
I'm going to say we're going to keep our first clean sheet of the season, and we're going to win 1-0 in a Port Vale-esque display that's one of the most boring games you're ever going to watch, but we're going to get the 3 points.
I think we're going to lose 1-0, similar to last season. Was the score 1-0 last season? I can't remember. It was a boring game, wasn't it? 2-1. Thank you for correcting me there. I'd love to say we're going to get our first clean sheet. I believe Jed Steer's probably got one of them clean sheet gifts on Twitter ready to go, but we've not been able to use it yet. But I think we're going to have to wait for the Stevenage game to get that.
I think I will agree with John on this one, that we're going to keep our first clean sheet of the season. I think it's coming after Saturday. I think Wallen and Fernandez deserve it. I think we'll win 1-0 as well. I already had the words Port Vale-esque in my head, so John sort of just completely trampled on what I was about to say here. But no, I think it'll be a bit of a smash and grab, and I'm going to back Malik Mothersill to score the winner.
Despite our disagreements this episode, John and Charlie have summed up exactly what I was thinking. And I also had Port Vale-esque on the top of my mind. So there's three of us that think that. So I'm also going with a 1-0 win away. And I think, as I said earlier, it will be scrappy. Fatigue's in the question. It is going to be slightly scrappy, but I think we are going to win 1-0. Yeah, it should be enjoyable.
I've got to stick with what I said on the Wigan podcast that I went on, which was that we'd come out fast like we did against Birmingham and we'd then struggle with fatigue, having played so many intense games. But we'd get two goals early on. They'd manage to get one as we fatigued, and we'd leave it at that. Us winning 2-1 is a prediction I've got. We shall see. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Appreciate it. Out the posh.
Out the posh.
Out the posh. Hey.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Up the Poshcast. Let us know your feedback. Give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss or any questions you'd like us to answer. Up the Poshcast.
Sorry.
Please help me.
Sorry.